Magic Book Club with Bensons for Beds.
Welcome to the Magic Book Club podcast, the podcast where we find out exactly what makes our favourite authors put pen to paper. Well, you know, these days, fingers to keyboards. On this episode, we're joined by the mind behind a gorgeous debut novel, Caleb Azuma, an actual Hollywood superstar, Priyanka Chopra Jones, who chats to Tom Price about just what goes into writing a memoir when you're still only 38. So sit back, pour yourself a cuppa, or spark up that treadmill in the garage as we find out just what makes these authors tick. First up, then, we are super excited to be joined by a very exciting young author and the great, wise mind behind the beautiful debut novel, Open Water. It's Caleb Azuma Nelson. Hello.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm not too bad, thank you, for a drizzly Friday in January. What about your good self?
I think we're in the same boat. Yeah. I'm doing all right. I'm doing okay.
How's lockdown treating you this time around? Are you slowly going bonkers, or is it a time where you get more creative?
It's been interesting because I guess I'm at this point just under a week out from publication, and so things have really been ramping up in that time. Simultaneously, I have just been inside for so long at this point that I feel like I'm just going round in circles.
Your Open Water is your debut novel. It is out very, very soon. And how does it feel? Because this is, it's been such a breath of fresh air, Caleb. I can't tell you reading it. And, in a sea of kind of great cinematic thrillers with 29 adjectives in each sentence, this just is beautiful. It's been a joy to read. But obviously, it's extremely personal and has been close to you for a very long time. So how does it feel to be releasing your baby into the book universe?
It's a strange feeling, having signed my book contract in October 2019 and obviously having really grand plans for 2020 and seeing those scuppered by the pandemic. I feel like I've just kind of been waiting really like excitedly to get to this point, like a kind of like a jittery child that's about to get a present. And I think, we're about like just under a week from that. And so the like nerves have set in very slightly, but it's more so like an anticipation rather than anything else. Like, I'm just really excited to see it out in the world.
I think it's fairly safe to say that the signs are really good and the buzz is really tangible. It's been huge online. They're just swathes of fantastic reviews. That's got to feel good though, right?
It does. I think having worked so hard on writing it, I wrote it really quickly. Like, I wrote the majority of Open Water in about 2 or 3 months.
Wow.
In this kind of like feverish like summer of 2019. But obviously afterwards kind of went back through and was editing and working with my UK and US editors to just get it perfect. And it's so nice to have all of the energy that I put into it reciprocated and just see all of the buzz and the reviews.
It's really funny that you said that feverish summer of 2019, because you can feel that. And it feels, as a read, it feels like I'm in your brain. It really feels like I'm in your brain. And there's this constant stream of thought in amongst the plot and the story and the character. I feel like I'm so carried with you. I don't really want to give away any spoilers, what can you tell us? How would you describe the story that you've written?
I think first and foremost, it's a love story, right? You know, two young people meet by chance in a bar in Southeast London, and just have a very immediate attraction to each other. And across the course of the book, experience this real pull and tug of that attraction and of this like blossoming love, and seeing that tested over time and circumstance and distance. It was a real joy to write, but I think at times it was really heartbreaking too. And I think it's also a book about loss as well. There's kind of experiences of grief within the book, as well as loss of self and identity. And I think that, I don't want to give too much away. I won't go too much into it, but that's the kind of little teaser there.
Well, it is, you know, it is heartbreaking. And also, can I thank you personally as well for the music? This is so interactive. So I've gone, like I did this the other day, so I've gone and picked out all the music. I've got you to blame for spending an absolute shed load on iTunes, okay? but I was, so it's just, I went back and reread the last couple of chapters listening to Grief by Earl Sweatshirt, and it was like, you know, that aching soundtrack, and these other bits and pieces. It's so sensual. Did you always intend for it to feel quite three-dimensional like that?
Yeah, of course. I think it was as I started writing, like I understood that all of these different references were making their way into my writing process and were giving the writing another dimension that I couldn't have even expected. Like that Earl Sweatshirt song, Grief, is it samples an Erykah Badu song, which samples the song previously. And so there's all these like various layers that are coming into the work that you don't explicitly know, but you can feel. And it just, every time that I would insert a song into the narrative, it would take a direction of its own, and I just kind of trusted that direction it was going in.
Thank you as well for reminding us all how wonderful that Solange album is. Oh my God, it's so good.
Of course.
Now, the two characters are obviously in this highly complicated love story, and it is, you know, heartbreaking and joyous in equal measure. Also, of course, Open Water is reflecting on the ideas of race and masculinity, which have been, sort of thrust into the limelight, particularly in the last 12 months. Mm-hmm. As a young black man, yourself, with the backdrop of how amazing the conversation has become around Black Lives Matter and how passionate the whole conversation has become in the last 12, 18 months. What is your hope with a book like this?
I think it's... it's interesting, right, because I wrote this book before this very sudden explosion last year during the pandemic of the awareness of the Black Lives Matter moment. And I think with this book, I'm kind of trying to say that these issues have existed long before they were like really publicly aware, and they will continue to exist even when it kind of comes in and out of the news cycle. And like, I wanted to commit something that felt down to paper, that felt very permanent, that could be like a reference point that was always there and that you could always kind of look to and could start conversations and could encourage people to, on both sides, to come forward and to express themselves very freely.
And have you, how much of your own experiences so far influenced this as well? I mean, I guess Samuel is to a degree an everyman, an every young black man.
Yeah, I think I think so much of the book was me trying to, because it's not autobiographical, but it was me trying to tap into feelings that I'd experienced and really work from there. I think so often when I was writing, it was like, okay, well, what have you felt before and how can we use this to push the narrative rather than using plot to push the narrative? I really wanted, as you described, it's like a really sensual experience, and I wanted it to be something that the reader was really feeling. And I think that also pushed my decision to put the book in the second person and have it addressed as like kind of like a you. So it felt like the reader was both an audience and also the protagonist themselves. They were also feeling exactly what was happening.
It's such a refreshing read from that perspective, you know, that putting it in that person. And actually, because we get so used to novels being written in a certain style, it actually took a little bit of getting used to, you know, kind of, wow, you've got to concentrate, and you get so much back from it for doing that as well. I just wonder about how you feel, because of the subject matter and because of the Black Lives Matter discussion that's happened, whether or not that puts more pressure on you as a, you know, that you are the voice of young black writers. Does that make life easier or more difficult, or is it something that you take willingly?
I think there's definitely a slight pressure there, in that there just aren't that many black writers being published in the UK. There are lots of black writers, but they aren't making their way into the forefront like that. but like I kind of embrace it in a sense. Like I knew what I was getting myself into when I wrote this book. Like I understood that there were parts of like myself and of my personal experiences to do with race and discrimination, and particularly like police and state violence, that were being inserted here that I knew I would have to discuss. But like I also understood that I had to go to those places in order to write this book. Like I had to make myself vulnerable in order to do that.
Now, as well as it being a fantastic study of gender and race and romance and love, it is also I'm not even going to say a bit, a massive love letter to Southeast London. Even the beloved Peckhamplex gets a mention, which my producer Alex will be thrilled about when she gets to read it, because it's like, you know, it's for those people who don't know, Peckhamplex is an independent cinema in Peckham, which is like just brilliant and super full of character. Everybody's very passionate about their little corner of London. Why does Southeast London mean so much to you?
It's where I've lived all my life, really. It has just been like the past 26, 27 years has been occupied in this kind of tiny corner of London that feels like its own country at times. Anyone from Southeast London will just argue you like off the table if you try to say that any other part, even like Southwest, is better than Southeast.
Yeah, Dulwich is pushing it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. but it is just like a. I think I really wanted to render this part of my life and this community that, like, I've always known, and even if I were to move away, would always know, in just like its full quality and like afford all of the characters the colour that they deserve.
You write so beautifully, and I, you know, like I said, it does just feel like you know, a stream of consciousness sometimes, and that I'm very much under your skin. Your short story Prey was also shortlisted for the BBC National Short Story Award 2020.
Yeah.
And I know, because I introduce you as this young debut author, but of course the reality of it is that you've been writing for many, many years. was it something that you knew you wanted to do? Because obviously you have your photography side as well. Was it something that was on the list, or has it just sort of appeared as something that happened?
No, this is like, this feels like it's been like 20 years in the making. Like I've always wanted to write. I remember being 5, 6 years old and just always having a book in my hand and forcing my mum to go to the shops when she didn't want to go and buy me more books. And
we hear you were a bit of a library fanatic as well.
Absolutely. Any spare time I'd be in the library. When I was like 9 or 10, asked my local council to get a library installed in our school because I'd run out of books to read.
Good man.
Yeah, I really appreciate libraries, and actually Open Water was, a lot of it was written in the British Library at St Pancras.
That's old school, going to the library to write. I keep telling my teenage daughter, I'm like, well, we were your age, we'd go to the library to revise. She's like, I don't even know what that is. That's a hugely inspirational place to write as well. Can you remember what you were reading when you were younger? Those first authors that inspired you?
I remember reading a lot of Mallory Blackmun growing up. Just like always reaching and being like, okay, so when's her new book out? Like, what's next?
Awesome.
And just getting to the point where I was just rereading her work and being like, well, where else can I find narrative like this?
We're just on the brink of Open Water being in the hands of the nation. Has this come sooner than you thought? Because this is obviously there's a huge buzz around it, and everybody's very excited about it. Are you ready for it, Caleb? Are you ready for the attention?
I feel ready now, but I think initially when I signed Open Water and had this kind of like 9-way auction to sell the book, like I was honestly a bit shocked. I was really amazed. I was like, this is like something. I think it really got to like midway through 2020 before I really was able to process that specific moment. And even now, kind of like a week away from putting the book out, it feels very surreal. It feels like a dream. But I feel ready. I do feel ready.
God. We like to find out a little bit about how our authors write on the podcast. So you said that you wrote this over most of it anyway, over 2 or 3 months, very, very quickly. So describe where you are when you're writing. Do you sit? Do you put it on tape? What do you write with?
I tend to, when I have a project on, what tends to happen is that I'm like furiously note-taking all the time, to the point that like it will begin to annoy people around me. I'm like, I'm note-taking on my phone, on an app, or I'm like scribbling with a notebook, because like the thoughts and the sentences just keep coming. And I tend to write in the morning, so I will get up as early as possible. When I was writing Open Water, it would be for the library's opening at 9:30, and I would have a coffee to get ready and to steady myself. And because I don't often plan what's coming next, like I just kind of like trust myself and what I have been thinking about, and like have faith in myself that something is going to come, there's always this brief period of about 2 or 3 minutes where I have this like insane panic where I'm just like, oh well, I can't write anymore, I've forgotten how
it's
to
a
do
blank
this
page.
Yeah, like what am I doing? But once I bat that away, it's kind of like I ease into it, and then I will just write steadily for most of the day. I usually be on my laptop, I'll have my headphones on, I've got a playlist going. I have to remind myself to get up and walk and take breaks, because they are really useful. But before, it'd be like 3 hours before I noticed that my stomach was like grumbling angrily at me.
Eat, man, come on. There's I really want to this leads me to my next question, because there is a little trailer, a video trailer for Open Water on your Twitter page. Is this a little experiment in visuals, or is this a tease that we might have a TV adaptation to come?
It's an experiment in visuals, in that I wanted to, like, as a photographer, I was just like, I need to do something visually for this work. And there might be more coming, but I really wanted to, at this stage, was like, oh, well, I want to do something that puts my own stamp on it. And kind of like, I know that people really, really like resonate with things visually nowadays. And so last month, actually, I asked one of my friends who is a producer. I was like, okay, I want to put this together by sometime in January. What would it take to happen? And he initially laughed at me.
A miracle?
He initially laughed at me, but really quickly helped me put this together. Like, we did pre-production for about 2 weeks, and then shot like a few days before Christmas. And it was honestly just a dream shoot. Like, everyone was so hands-on and was ready to just commit to getting it done. And yeah, it's been really, it's actually, the response to it has just been so lovely. It's been really, really nice.
It's completely gorgeous. And I instinctively, I don't know, I just feel like you could experience this novel of yours on so many different levels and in so many different ways. I can see myself sort of walking through galleries with the playlist and pictures and, you know, spoken word and everything. It's an absolutely gorgeous piece of writing, Caleb. And I'm so excited for you, and for everybody else to get their hands and read on this, because it feels important and it's so beautifully written. Thank you so much for coming and talking to us on the podcast. It's been a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you. Thank you. Do take care.
What an absolutely gorgeous person he is. And it's a fabulous debut. If that's a taste of what we have to come, then we're in for a treat from this young writer. Now, from stunning debuts to huge Hollywood superstars, our very own Tom Price caught up with the ridiculously talented Priyanka Chopra Jones about her new memoir, Unfinished. I know she's young, but she's got a lot to fill it with.
Priyanka, tell us a little bit about all the things that you've got going on in your life at the moment. You are filming at the moment, but in between filming, you've managed to... I mean, does one even drop a book these days? I know, you know, all sorts of things get dropped on social media. You've got a memoir, right? Tell us about this.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about that. Like, I'm an author. What? I'm a little mind blown that, you know, somebody took a chance on that. I always wanted to write. It's something that I was excited about, but also very nervous about, because I think it's a really large achievement to be able to write a book. So I thought I would write a memoir, because it seems like that would be the easiest thing to write about, right? Like, you've lived your life, so just write it.
Yeah.
Completely wrong. That's not how it goes. It's like jumping into the deep end if you're writing a memoir. And, you know, you have to really think about, is your life interesting enough to write about, really? And what are the memories and what are the lessons? And it's cathartic and healing. And I was trying to corroborate my 20 years in the entertainment business when I decided that, all right, I'm going to write a book and I'm going to take stock of my life. And then it sort of ran away from me. It took a life of its own, and it became very personal. And I was surprised too. I think if it wasn't for quarantine and if it wasn't for such a daunting time in the world, maybe it would have been a different book.
Right. Okay. Well, why do you mean? Because you've got all that time in quarantine. So you're sort of, are you going deep as you write it? Are you remembering things you've forgotten about for years?
Yeah. It's not like I would be writing it's not like I'm writing the book on a plane. Like when I have an hour between two cities or this time I was at home and I was in my safe comfort zone and I could sit down with the computer and sometimes a pen and whatever device I needed. But I took the time to sort of look inside, and it's not easy, and you can't do it on the go. And I realized that because I had 6 months to just be at home and actually focus on thinking about everything that I'd been through. And of course there were memories that I didn't even remember, and I had to corroborate with people. And there were things that I didn't think about, hadn't thought about for years, which just popped up.
What like? Give us an example. What sort of things?
Just like early career, early memories. I was writing about when I went to boarding school in third grade. Mm. And there were memories, like literally visceral memories of what that boarding school felt like. It was like Hogwarts, you know. It was like Harry Potter-like. And I remember the cold air in the, you know, cafeteria because it was such large, made of stone. The sound of shoes and like it was so visceral to me when I was writing. I'm a visual person, being an actor. I come from performance arts, so everything is very visual for me. So even my writing, sort of, I saw it very visually when I was writing it.
Yeah, very visual, but also there's an academic seam, isn't there, in your life? Things like the engineering and all that, like the life that could have been.
Sliding doors, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, as an engineer, you could probably design some sliding doors, but yeah.
That's true. Time travel ones as well.
Yes, please.
You know, I was always very fascinated with science. I still am. I love tech. I think innovation and technology is incredible. I mean, look at where we are. We're being able to do everything because of technology while being in a global pandemic, you know. So I think that it was definitely a vocation I was really interested in. But, you know, destiny pushed me towards the arts, I guess, and thankfully so, I have the life that I do. But I think that I'm just someone who has a thirst for knowledge. So I think even if I would have done that, I would have kind of had the same philosophy, which is, you know, imbibing and learning and being a student and, you know, being executing the best you can on an everyday basis. Mm. So I may have done all right there too.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, not bad. How have you found it then to divide up all these different things you've got going on in your life? How do you, you know, a lot of people find time management incredibly difficult. So to be on a set 1 minute, to be writing a memoir the next, I know you say quarantine's helped, but how do you segment, if you like, your life up into all these different chunks?
Ooh, I have a really great answer for this because I've thought about it tremendously and it's taken me 20 years, but I've gotten to a place where I've simplified it.
Oh, give me wisdom. Give us the wisdom.
Okay. So you divide it into two. Life and work. That's it. You don't need anything else. You have to say, all right, in 24 hours, I want to work for 15 hours, or I want to work for 8 hours or 10 hours or whatever your day requires of you. But once that's done, you shut the door.
Good.
And you come back home to your family, your dining table, you watch, you know, binge watch TV, but you have to, that division is crucial. And then everything else that is not family falls into the work category. So that could be my beauty line, it could be my book, it could be whatever, but I have to decide how much time I'm going to dedicate to that and then come back to real life, because work can't be real life.
I think that's such good advice. And it's so difficult at the moment because we're all stuck in these small spaces at the moment. And it's very, very hard to say, right, I'm going to go to that corner of the house to do work. And this corner of the house is my family. They're sort of merging into one mess at the moment. There's lots of people, you know, half the time they're on WhatsApp trying to do work things while the kids are getting in the way and stuff. So that feels very pertinent advice. I like that.
Even within our house, like this room that I've created, this is my workspace. Yeah. Everything else is, you know, sort of my life space. So to have a space dedicated in your home, which is like, this is where I'm going to go for work. And you shut the door to that as soon as you're done and then come back home to, you know, it creates a normalcy to the chaos that we all live in, especially right yes. now with the world of information. We have so much information that's bombarded to us that you have to be able to compartmentalize. That's the yeah. only way to be sane.
So tell us a bit about the sort of thing we're going to find out when we read this book. Are we going to find out a bit about life with you and Nick, for example, how you met Nick? That's all in there, isn't it?
Well, he is a big chapter in my life, so he's a big chapter in my memoir.
Yeah, he'd be furious if he wasn't in it. Can you imagine Maybe. The moment when he reads it? Like he's finishing it on the bed and he's like, darling, I'm not in it. That'd be so awkward. You wouldn't get away with that.
No, he's this book is a massive reflection of where I am today and the things that matter to me today. And he's obviously a big part of that. So he's in the book. And he approved it, thank God. So it's all good.
There was a nod. Was there a nod when he was happy with what was in there?
Yeah.
How have you found lockdown with him? How has that been? Just the two of you bouncing off the walls, or has it been quite nice to have that quality time?
Oh, not at all. I mean, you know, we have such large individual careers, which, you know, demand so much from us. This was yeah. truly a blessing. We would have never had 6 months together. It's not a possibility. But, you know, we still like each other at the end of that. So it shows that, you know, we're in a good place. And that was something that I think we really needed.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a second honeymoon.
Yeah, but my first one didn't last 6 months.
There you go. It's a six-month honeymoon. The dream.
The dream, for sure.
So the experience of writing the book, which is called Unfinished. You're very young to be writing a memoir. There's going to be an Unfinished 2, right? And an Unfinished 3, surely.
Well, I'm glad that, you know, the title is sort of franchise-like.
Yeah.
It lends itself to a sequel. Hopefully, you know. I definitely do want to be able to write again. I don't know if it's a book or a screenplay or what form it will be. But let's see what happens with this first one. You know, if people sort of take to it, and it's I'm doing it for the first time. So I'm nervous at the moment.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant. And you write beautifully about, you know, there's dark times, the passing of your father. That's obviously, it's a very personal thing. And it's hard to write that in such a touching way without resorting to, I don't know, cliche. It feels fresh and very real. And it's beautiful to read. It's really great. It's great.
Thank you so much. That was not great. The easiest thing to write about.
No, I was going to say, how was that process? Was it therapeutic in the end, or was it very difficult?
I don't know if it was difficult or therapeutic. I think it was just factual. When I was writing it, I was just writing what I remembered. I couldn't feel anything. But I think when I read it in the form of the whole manuscript, when I read the entire book for the first time, that's when it affected me the most, because I was sort of going through I was navigating my life in real time while I was reading the book. And then I felt what I felt at that time. And I think that was hard. I had to stop, I had to pause, you know, take a moment. You know, but like, there were times, many times in the book, sort of, I felt like that, which were things that you know, discussed in the book that I probably never have, never will. Personal things, emotions, failures. You know, I've been a public person for a very long time, but I've still been rather private with like the real things, you know. So this is sort of like I scratched below the surface, and it surprised me too.
Are there things that you held back on? Are there things which you think you'll get around to when you do the sequel?
No, but I didn't make this book about other people. I didn't make this book about things that don't matter to me anymore. I just, you know, it's personal essays. So it's all about where I am right now at this age and this moment and sort of reflecting at everything else. So so nothing really as crucial that I've sort of pulled out of the book.
Okay. Okay. Good. Good. Okay. And in terms of you as a reader, because everyone who writes a book has got to be a fan of reading. What do you go to? Are you an avid reader? What kind of stuff do you like to read?
I love reading whenever I get a chance to, actually, because most of the time I'm behind a pile of scripts. You know, my production company is developing a bunch of movies right now, so I always have so much reading I'm behind on. Because I'm a little hands-on myself about it. But I do love a good book and just getting lost in it before I sleep. You know, one more chapter, one more page. It's like, it's my favorite when I find a book like that. And, you know, I'm very moody about my reading, depending on, it's sort of like how I consume movies, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, it's what you feel like. I feel like an action movie today, or I usually do read two books at the same time, you know, because I'm moody. But I read this amazing book called Homegoing, which I've been recommending to all my friends. It's by an author called Ya Gyasi, and it's a story of two sisters from Ghana a couple of centuries ago. One who marries a slave trader and one who's sold into slavery. And the five generations after that, which, you know, ends somewhere in like Harlem or in America somewhere. And it's the journey of their descendants. It was so fascinating, the writing.
Wow.
And the immersion of culture and family. And it was very immersive as a story. Then of course, The White Tiger, I would recommend to my movie, which is right now out on Netflix, but I would really recommend to people to read the novel. It's by an author called Alvin Adiga, and it's amazing.
Fantastic, fantastic. Yes, that is out now on Netflix, isn't it? So many things going on, Priyanka. Thank you for finding time to talk to us on the Magic Book Club, and congratulations on Unfinished. And just to be clear, it is... This one is finished, right? This isn't like a pilot. This
one's
done.
No, it's finished. Thank God it's finished.
Okay. Thank God. She says, thank God. It's a great read, and what a fantastic life so far, Priyanka. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Bless him, Tom Price. What a lady. Well, that's all we've got time for on the Magic Book Club podcast today. Head to magic.co.uk to see the rest of our February picks and join the club. And in the meantime, happy reading.